The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, there you have it. New developments, right, in the race for the presidential election. That was Donald Trump. He, of course, expected to dominate Super Tuesday for the Republican side. Joe Biden did the same thing. Yesterday's Super Tuesday primaries they went just about like everybody expected. It was kind of boring, to be honest with you. I was plugged in. I was watching different outlets to see how they'd cover, but we kind of knew how it was all going to shake out, right? It was a foregone thing. President Trump and Biden took the lion's share of the delegates for their parties. The only state that did not go for Trump was Vermont, right? And that certainly didn't help the former South Carolina governor, Nikki Haley, at all. She also won D.C., the District of Columbia, but as you probably know by now, if you haven't, she's finally recognized she's not going to get the delegates she needs. She suspended her campaign. I don't know what you make of the speech she gave. Let me give you a little insight. Here's what Nikki Haley said at the end of this run. She'd stayed in for a long time. People constantly pressed her. Why are you staying in? Why are you staying in? What's your pathway to victory? Her presentation was only 7 minutes. It was kind of somber. There was no music surrounding her at all. What was, to me, revealing is that she did not specifically endorse Donald Trump. She did wish him well, but listen to what she had to say for yourself.
I sought the honor of being your president, but in our great country, being a private citizen is privilege enough in itself, and that's a privilege I very much look forward to enjoying. In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, "Never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind." It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
When it comes to Donald Trump, and we'll see, can he unify? I hope he can. People either love Donald Trump or they absolutely hate him. It's one or the other. I don't think there's any middle ground with him. President Biden, well, his poll numbers are just dismal right now. His age, that's not going to get any better. The president faced a surprise. The territory of American Samoa went for a politically unknown guy named Jason Palmer. Even the pundits and experts, commentators, like, who is this guy, right? Biden also faced a problem in Minnesota. There was a campaign there. I don't know if you've caught this at all. It was led by the very substantial Somali community there in Minneapolis to get people to vote uncommitted. And they hoped they'd get 5,000 votes. Guess how many they got? Almost 10 times that. They got 46,000 votes, more than even voted for Dean Phillips, who I think he's out now. The only one left is Marianne Williamson. But that sent a signal to Biden that, hey, you better support a ceasefire in Gaza. Maggie, you have audio of him getting onto Marine One, right? You were just playing for me. What's that all about? Maybe we'll share that as well.
I just came across this. A reporter asks on the tarmac, and I tried to clean it up a little bit. He says, "Are you concerned that Democrats are worried about your poll numbers?" And he basically says, "The last 5 polls have been great. They've been fine."
All right, I guess we're having some technical problems there, Maggie. Well, I'll just try to find that. I saw that audio the other day. Trump, of course, he decried the ills of the nation. I don't know. You might be concerned about inflation. It's one of the big problems that is facing Joe Biden. We have rising costs in the country, open borders, which are bringing in drugs and crimes in the cities. And Trump knows it's a problem. He wants to eliminate those worries. Here's some of what he had to say in his victory speech. Take a listen to this.
We've watched our country take a great beating over the last 3 years. And nobody thought a thing like this would be possible. We wouldn't have Russia attacking Ukraine. We wouldn't have Israel being attacked. Iran, as you know, was broke when I was running things. They were broke. They didn't have money for Hamas. They didn't have money for Hezbollah. But today it was just announced before I came out. It was unbelievable. I said, that must be a mistake. They flew 325,000 migrants, flew them in over the borders, into our country. So that really tells you where they're coming from. They want open borders, and open borders are going to destroy our country. We need borders, and we need free and fair elections, or we don't have a country.
Well, the presidential race is on, right? Pretty much down to 2 characters right now, Trump and Biden. We will see what ultimately shakes out. A lot going on. Do your due diligence. Know where these candidates stand on the moral issues and what their influence will mean on the future of our nation in terms of security, in terms of the economy, in terms most especially of so many of these critical moral issues, which I think are more important than those 2 issues I just raised. Because if we're not a virtuous people, then we have no future in this country. Our government will not stand. I'm telling you that right now. Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, he was also asking Joe Biden to support a ceasefire, not just in Gaza, on Catholic churches around the country. Just came across this. I thought this was awesome. Bravo, Senator Rubio. I'm grateful for this stand. I've been talking about how there's been attacks on places of worship now for 2, maybe 3 years. Every time an incident came, I began to report it. I dialed back because there's been so many of them. There's been 400 attacks on our houses of worship just since 2020. And you know that's part, I think, of a larger trend that the Family Research Council has noted. We spoke to them a little bit earlier in the week. They highlighted that there was an 800% increase. 800% increase in attacks on churches in the past 6 years. So what's behind that? I'll tell you what's behind it. I'll tell you personally, I really believe it is a spiritual attack. That's what I think this is. I think it's deeply rooted in the spiritual. I don't know if there's any set agenda. I really believe it's spiritual. It's heartbreaking to see so many attacks on these churches. Tommy Valentine from Catholic Vote actually was addressing this nationally. He was on Fox News. A number of incidences he claims are probably going to continue to rise. Guess why? Because of the issue of abortion. Check this out.
This really started in the summer of 2020 when we saw civil unrest across the whole country, and Catholic churches were caught up in that. The difference is that while the unrest died down in 2020, the attacks on Catholic churches continued and even accelerated into 2021. What changed in 2022 was the leak of the Supreme Court's draft decision in the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And the Catholic Church has always stood stalwart against abortion for decades, centuries. And the pro-abortion extremists who attacked pregnancy centers and churches knew this. And so the Catholic Church was one of their top targets. And we've seen over 200 attacks just in the past 2 years since that decision came down. And there's another interesting angle there, which is that a number of states have voted on abortion ballot measures in Ohio, Kansas, and Michigan. And in the run-up to those elections, we saw a dramatic surge in attacks in each of those states on Catholic churches, many of which had signs opposing those ballot measures to legalize abortion. And so that really qualifies as voter intimidation and voter suppression, right? Because they're trying to intimidate Catholics from speaking their voices and trying to influence an election. In 2024, we're going to have up to 12 states that are voting on abortion-related ballot measures. And if our churches are not being secured, we can expect more attacks against Catholic churches. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've called on the Biden administration to take action. Unfortunately, we've not seen a single federal prosecution of any of these attacks, even though they are illegal under federal law.
Yeah, and just to give you perspective on that, right? There have been more than three. There's, I'll give you a summary this way. There's been an average of more than once a week. That's what we're seeing here. You know, there have been three more attacks since, you know, January 1st, right? Bringing the total to 13. And, you know, it's just this year alone. And we're getting one a week. It's crazy. And these attacks, by the way, they're federal crimes. The Department of Justice has not brought a single perpetrator to justice. What's that say? These are not that complex, right? I think if you really wanted to, you know, shine the light on this and bring these offenders to justice, you certainly could. There's been absolutely no arrests on the federal level. Local law enforcement is having a hard time keeping up with so many claims. Senator Rubio, he wrote this letter and he concluded it by saying this. I'll just share one sentence from it. He says this. He says, "I demand you condemn the growing number of attacks on Catholic churches and make combating these incidents an urgent priority for your administration by prosecuting each and every offender to the fullest extent of the law." Senator Rubio is perhaps the only one who I hear out there, you know, from Congress or anywhere else, calling the president out on this. The president is going to champion the culture of death and reproductive freedom, which is a euphemism, of course, for abortion. Things that are diametrically opposed to what we as Catholics believe, and he will remain silent, and so will his Justice Department when it comes to literally an 800% increase in attacks on churches in just the past 6 years. 400 attacks since 2020 and 13 since the hands of time turned into the new year here. It's wild. Look, I've been reporting on it. I'll do my part. I'll continue to bring it to you. If you see these things or you can help in any way, you know, let local authorities know. Above all, let's pray. And if you are, you work at a church, let's make sure you work with, you know, the officials there to make sure that if there ever is, unfortunately, something that happens within the church, there's a plan of action for the congregants. You know, Pope Francis, let's just speak of the church. I've been praying for him. I'm going to invite you to do the same thing. I don't think he's doing well, personally. At the general audience today, he again handed his speech off to an aide to read for him. And he's been doing that for the last, week and a half now. And that's, you know, look, he's got one lung. He's suffering. He's up there in age. He is having trouble getting in and out of the Pope Mobile. In fact, he couldn't get back into the Pope Mobile. But there are three short steps to get into it. He was unable to get himself there. So aides brought him a wheelchair, and they took him around St. Peter's Square and that. Say a prayer for him. I don't think he's doing that well. And one final short story here, which I think is, well, I'm going to throw it out to you. I don't want to read too much into it. I always like to look at the big picture. Yesterday, you might have known that Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, these meta apps, they had this outage. And it was resolved a few hours after it started. Users were met with having to try to log into their accounts, and then they had to enter their details. They were denied access. Meta hasn't revealed the cause of the outage. And it makes you start to wonder. This came, remember, a week after an outage caused several thousand AT&T cell phone customers unable to get their phones. AT&T got it resolved. They said it was due to some new software that was uploaded, and it seemed to resolve the issue. And look, it all seems reasonable. But after Meta's outage yesterday and there's silence on why it happened, I don't know, just for me, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying anything more. Just it's food for thought, raises questions. Is there something else going on here? Is that a possibility? Is that a possibility? I don't know. We'll see if there's more outages or more hackings or more strange things happening. Hey, I saw a big story yesterday. You know, Bill Thierfelder, who's been a friend of this program for a long time, love this guy. He is president of Belmont Abbey College. It's a Benedictine liberal arts college in Belmont, North Carolina. He was an Olympian, just a wonderful athlete. I thought of him when I saw a story. I don't know where you stand on this. Right now, there is a move to unionize college athletes. Dartmouth has just done that. Back in 2021, the National Labor Relations Board issued a memo that made a pretty big decision. They issued a decision saying that student athletes are to be considered employees of their schools under the National Labor Relations Act. And since they're employees, they can be afforded all the protections of employees under the law. So it's an interesting develop along the lines of Dartmouth College basketball. The team players voted 13-2 to unionize. They want to be able to negotiate on issues like compensation. We've talked about this in the past, too. I mean, college athletes can make bank, big, big bucks. Is that something college athletes should do? Is it just? Is it fair? I'm joined right now by Dr. Thierfelder. Doctor, good to have you with me. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, how are you? It's great to be with you again.
I am delighted to have you back. It's good to talk with you. I love your thoughts on this. You know, college athletics should it remain pure and untouched by the American dollar? Is it a just thing to go ahead and to pay college athletes? And some of them may get big, big contracts as a result of this. And this whole idea of unionization, maybe we should start there. How do you perceive the move by Dartmouth's college to unionize within the context of college sports, you know, traditional amateur model?
Well, let me put this, because I think most people do not know this, and all they see is these elite schools. You know, there's 65 schools in the Power Five. You have the Ivies. All of them have enormous endowments. I mean, Dartmouth's endowment is $7.9 billion. Harvard's the highest with $50 billion endowment. And then you have the media rights for all the, you know, basketball and football and so forth. So let me just put this in perspective for people. In the NCAA alone, there's 304 Division II schools. There's 436 Division III schools. That's 78% of all the schools in the NCAA.
Wow.
None of them are making any money on athletics. As a matter of fact, we are losing money. It costs more to have athletics. The reason we do it is that we believe in the formation of the whole person. So we see it as it's part of the education. It's not just the book education. It's about your formation, about learning virtue and discipline and excellence in other areas outside of the classroom. And that's why we offer it. That's why most schools do. And just to, again, put it in perspective that people understand this, because you only hear about schools with these gigantic endowments. Half of the private colleges in the United States, there's about 1,200 of them, have endowments of less than $23 million, and you can't even use the 23. You're getting some earnings and appreciation off of it. So the idea that making students now professional athletes and making them employees, I will tell you what's going to happen. Most schools are, one, wouldn't be able to have athletics anymore, which means they're not going to be offering it to their students anymore, which means it would deprive many students of perhaps a college education. And then secondly, I would tell you many, maybe hundreds of them would end up closing because the enrollment would go away because they wouldn't have any athletics anymore. And so it would be a nightmare. So this idea of, you know, just looking at the Power Five and saying, well, look at what these people are making and so forth, this should apply to everybody. I think everybody's got to look a little deeper and see the impact, the negative impact this would have on most colleges and universities.
So there are others who argue, they say, you know, the revenue that some of these institutions generate is just astronomical. And yet the kids who are the athletes or the main players, they don't get any of the real profit. And it's a question of fairness. You know, why shouldn't they be compensated for their contribution, their work that goes well beyond what a scholarship would cover? And let's not forget, they risk injury every time they step onto a field. So some people make that argument. The other side, doctor, detractors say, hey, when you introduce payment for college athletes, it blurs the line between amateur and professional sports, you know, and there's a purity to amateur sports. There's passion, there's team spirit, there's virtue, as you point out, and that's more important than the monetary gain. When you inject the financial incentive into the mix, it can really blur things. Your thoughts, I can see both arguments.
Yeah, well, but let's take those arguments. Let's take the first one. What number are we talking about here? There's over 1,000. There's almost 1,100 colleges and universities in NCAA. I'm not even talking about NAIA, which has another 241, which I think out your way, there's a lot of NAIA schools. The Power Five has 65 colleges and universities in it out of 1,100. And not all of them are making a fortune, but my point is, I agree there are some athletes that are generating, you know, incredible amounts of money, and that should be discussed. And there should be ways, I think, of sort of fairness there. Yep. But what I'm saying is we got to be real careful that we don't, as they say, throw out the baby with the bathwater here, that we don't destroy all of college education and formation for the very few. I mean, that's less than 6%.
Wow. My guest today, Dr. Bill Thierfelder. If you want to join us, the toll-free number is 888-914-9149. Feel free to join us. Doctor, there's fairness across the board. If athletes start getting paid, my other issue here with it is, how does fairness play out between female sports and male sports? Do they get paid the same or don't they? Not all the programs bring in the same revenue either. And that could lead to inequality, can, I think, lead to resentment within the athletic community. I think it's a mess. I mean, I see the monetary angle of this, but I think it's personally going to cause more headaches than it is help.
Well, again, I think something does have to be worked out for the places that are generating hundreds of millions of dollars, right? I mean, there does need to be something worked out there. I'm just trying to point out, I mean, let me put it in perspective. Belmont Abbey College's tuition, our sticker price tuition, is $19,500. Our institutional scholarships that we award probably bring the average cost that a student is paying for tuition fees down to $12,000 a year.
Wow.
And then if you apply grants, if you got a full Pell grant, that's over $7,000, and then some state grants. I mean, can you see what you're paying? And so to say that a place like Belmont Abbey College now should make all of its students that are participating in sports professional athletes and employees of the college, we couldn't do it. I mean, and plus, I'm trying to show you financially, we're not making some fortune. It costs us more to have student athletes participating than just have students there going to school.
Yeah. Is this unionization that Dartmouth has, you know, just embraced, is that going to ripple out across college sports? You think a lot of other institutions are going to do that now? And how do you see that changing things?
Well, you know what? This is a money deal, right? And you know this as well as I do, Drew. When you bring money into a situation, boy, the vultures come out, the wolves come out, everybody's coming out to get their share of this. And so anything that can make agents money and lawyers money and other people money, institutions money, everybody's going to be all in on it. So if this can be perceived as a way of generating money for people, you're going to have people getting behind it. But I'm saying it's going to do damage because the vast majority, who at Belmont Abbey College is going to make a fortune from athletics? We don't take any money. Right. We don't get any TV deals. I mean, it's just crazy. And given the number, I'm trying to say 78% of all of the institutions are not going to generate anything.
Yeah, it's true. It's well said. Doctor, your book, Less Than a Minute to Go, The Secret to World-Class Performance in Sports, Business, and Everyday Life. That'll be a great read for people who are interested. How do they get a hold of that?
Well, you can just go. The easiest way is to go to Amazon. It's on there. You can get an audiobook or soft cover, hard cover, whatever you want. And again, I get nothing from the book. I just want to be clear about that. I donated all the proceeds that would come from that book to Belmont Abbey College. So I think it has some good insights into sport and the development of the whole person, body, mind, and soul, which is, by the way, what athletics and college athletics should be about. And I hope people would enjoy it and be able to pass it along and
Well, we're going to put a link to it in our show notes. We'll put it up on our social media. Maggie says she'll take care of that for you. And if you want to check out a very good Catholic institution, check out Belmont Abbey College. You can check them out at bac.edu. bac.edu. Dr. Bill Thierfelder is the president of Belmont Abbey College. Doctor, thank you for your time. Always good to have you here.
Drew, you are great, and I miss you. So hopefully we can get together sometime soon.
I do. I hope our paths cross soon. It'll be great. Okay. You let me know, okay?
Okay.
All right. That's Dr. Bill Thierfelder. I got to take a short pause. Stay with me when I return. We'll change gear. You're going to like this one. If you are on social media and you feel like, gosh, I just can't remember anything anymore, stay tuned. You might be surprised by this. I'm going to speak to a man. He's the executive director of the Institute for Family Studies, who compares the effects of screen time to his years as a daily weed smoker. And he says that erased huge swaths of his memory. Do these new platforms do the same? We'll look at that more when I return.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Sponsor of the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers, invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
I love the escape.
Screenager.
You want to keep scrolling and scrolling.
I'm on my phone about 10 hours a day.
Everything's on the phone. Nobody really, like, speaks face-to-face with people anymore.
I'm just, like, stuck on the phone, and I just can't get off.
The average American teen will spend 30 years of their life behind a screen.
Is social media safe for my kids? Growing evidence of harms.
Social media use may compromise the mental health of young people.
Endless access could be fueling addiction.
She was being pushed content about body image and self-harm.
When we think about giving our children smartphones, it's like putting a two-year-old in the driver's seat of a car. There would be a crash.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We've been talking about the impact of social media and in particular screen time on our kids for a long time. It's really quite telling. I feel bad for the parents who raised kids in the 90s and in the year 2000s when all this stuff was really just beginning to take traction. Nobody knew. Nobody knew. I know a lot of parents today. Maggie's a pregnant mother right now. She's going to have a baby. Maggie, before I speak to Michael Toscano, let me ask you, what are you going to do with screens with your kids? You know, I mean, I see young little kids, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old with iPads in their hand to occupy them.
Yeah, I know that.
It's going to be hard.
I know. And I know that that's an easy thing to give kids and, yeah, and to keep them occupied. But Joe and I both feel pretty strongly that we're not going to give our kids any sort of electronics until they're like at least 16.
Wow.
Probably.
Oh, my God, just a long time.
I mean, they can learn. They can learn how to use a computer and everything. Yeah, but I we're not giving them personal.
Well, we've talked so much, you and I, about it. I mean, we've seen the depressive rates, the anxiety, the suicidal ideation, so many of the other things. But our next guest is going to join us in a second. Says that, you know, screen time had the same effect as smoking weed daily.
Yeah, you know, and I have a older brother. They've got 3 little girls, and, mm-hmm, and you know, there's plenty of times at dinner when, you know, one of them's acting up, and they'll be like, "Oh, you want the iPad? You want the iPad?"
No, it's a babysitter.
And bring it out. And I just feel like kids are missing out on viewing essential interactions and like picking up how to communicate over dinner, yeah, over these, like, these are prime social constructions right there. I don't know.
No, I totally agree with you. There was another story. I don't know if I'll have time to get to today on this, but more screen time was the headline, and it says means less parent-child talk. That's a new study that they're out, and they say toddlers who are exposed to more screen time have fewer conversations with their parents or caregivers by an array of measures. They say less, they hear less, and they have fewer back and forth exchanges with adults compared to children who spend less time in front of the screen. So there you go. You're lucky. You've gone through all this, and you're going to be a good mom. I'm excited for you.
I hope so.
So, yeah. You know, the New York Times reported on an article from the journal JAMA Pediatrics, and it should get your attention. So in fact, that's where that study came from. If toddlers are exposed to more screen time, that's the byproduct. Fewer conversations, right? They say less, hear less, and fewer back and forth exchanges. It's going to end up being bad news for you as your children get older. And if you want to have a good relationship with your child, especially as they become teenagers, you need to spend time with them. Establish it with when they're young. I know it's a sacrifice. I know life is busy. You know, I know it's a lot easier to say, here, you know, watch this or play with this, because you need some downtime. But I'll tell you, your investment in your kid will pay off in multiples later if you do that. Here's the other thing, and I want to talk about this. Not only does screen time interfere with children's language development and interaction with their parents, I saw a fascinating article by Michael Toscano where he says it also impedes memory. So there was this other study. It was published in 2020. They found that the potential harmful effects – of extensive screen time and technology. If you're using it a lot, it includes heightened attention deficit symptoms, impaired emotional and social intelligence, technology addiction, social isolation, impaired brain development, and disruptive sleep. That's the litany.
Wow.
That's a lot. That is a lot. So when you're constantly distracted by the next fleeting thing that flashes on your screen, you're not in any position to be able to create really good memories. Now, I'm not a physician, right? I'm not a psychiatrist, but I am absolutely convinced that these anxiety levels and the depression that this generation, this next generation has experienced, it's all tied to this. So one author has found that screen time could be as bad as, well, smoking marijuana on a daily basis. And that person is Michael Toscano, executive director of the Institute for Family Studies. He was saved from what he describes as self-described madness by a miraculous intervention. I can't wait to hear his story. And he has found that tech is interfering with his ability to concentrate and remember things almost as much as we did. Michael, it's so good to have you. Thanks for writing about this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Drew. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, what do you make of that first study Maggie and I were talking about, that toddlers who use screen time don't interact with their parents as much as, you know, kids who aren't using them?
It's an astounding study. It, I think, should raise alarm bells in every parent. And I think the reason why we shouldn't be surprised by this is just, you know, at every moment you're making a choice between doing one thing and not doing another or several others. And when you're choosing to turn to your phone or to scroll on your social media platform, you're choosing against something else. And in the context of your family, yeah, you're choosing against your family. And it might seem small in the moment, but the repercussions are really large over the long haul.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, I think it was First Things. You wrote that because of your daily marijuana use, you lost just about all your memories of your childhood.
Yeah.
Bring us back. Tell us your story. I mean, how frequently, how much did you smoke, and what happened?
Well, I mean, I smoked for a number of years. It's foggy, and I don't mean that as a joke, but it truly is. I think I began to smoke somewhere around 14 or 15. I'm now 42 years old, so I've had a long time since then. But I was a daily smoker of several times a day until I was about 23, 24 years old. And it was really tearing me apart. I had intense bouts of paranoia and was having difficulty recalling practically anything that was happening to me, or, you know, just in recent memory. I couldn't, my mind just had lost control of its basic powers, and I became extremely nervous and was living fearfully. And I remember I had a conversion to evangelical Christianity. Since then, I have wow, become Catholic, and that conversion happened in a night of prayer.
I want to hear about that, but before you share the conversion, mm-hmm, I just want to jump back. You were smoking when you were young, though, so your brain, your high school, college, right, your 20s, early mm-hmm 20s, teenage. Mm-hmm. So the frontal cortex of a man's brain, a male brain, is still developing, and I wonder if it's different for somebody who smokes as intensely as you did when you were young versus somebody who's older. Like, I know some people in their 50s who smoke daily, right? And I wonder what it does to their brain. Does it wipe their memory as well? Or do you think that this had a profound impact on you because of your youth?
I mean, I honestly couldn't say. I'm not an expert on, you know, on the effects of marijuana use on the brain. Right. I can only just speak to my own experience, which is that, you know, weren't just stripped from my memory. It was all of my childhood memories had just been completely wiped away. And I have a few smatterings of things here and there, but I can tell you that those have become, the very idea of them are extremely precious to me now that I'm older. And of course, I'm deeply saddened that I had done that to myself.
That's sad. So what happened? So I believe God reaches out to all of us. He does. And clearly you had you had some grace. It brought you out of the lifestyle, and now you're helping others. What was that conversion like that led you out of this lifestyle?
I think God was using my pain to call me to Him, and I was in serious, desperate need, as you know, as just to clarify the destructiveness of this. Yeah. A friend of mine who knew me during those years told me years later that he thought that he once told me over coffee years later that I wasn't going to make it, quote unquote. Wow. And I think what he saw was my mind just slipping away and going to some extremely dark places. So, I mean, my conversion, it was a moment of intense grace, which liberated me from these addictions, but it's been a lifetime of discipleship since then to work through all of the things that I had done to myself,
You're not alone either. I know a lot of other people have said the same thing. Maggie, you used to smoke, weed a lot. What was it for you?
Listening to Michael, it made me think back on my early 20s when I was farthest away from my family and farthest away from my faith. And I followed a very similar path as he's talking about. And one thing I did just want to mention, because it was the last straw for me that led to my conversion, but it's pretty common now that I have done the research, but people actually have episodes of psychotic breaks. You have psychosis because of, you know, what it's done to your mind. And that is, I've heard, something that is pretty frequent in young people now who smoke weed.
Yeah, well, it's because the weed today is probably even stronger, Michael, than when you were smoking it. You know what I mean? It's just, the THC levels are through the roof in weed. So bring us back to your story. So what happened next?
Well, what happened next was that I was, you know, trying to find a way forward. I was looking for a way to, obviously wanted to become something of a professional. I wanted to mature in my Christian faith. And I ended up, I grew up in the suburbs around New York City, and I ended up at a small liberal arts Christian college in New York City called the King's College, which has recently closed its doors, unfortunately. But at the time, they had an extremely intense, rigorous curriculum that was focused on reading excellent books and requiring its students to encounter great thinkers like Plato, Aristotle, and others. But in our first year, we also read the early church fathers and St. Augustine. Oh. And I was deeply moved by what I discovered there. But at the same time, they weren't suffering any fools. If I was going to survive there as a student, I had to work extremely hard in order to get decent grades and to graduate. And that meant having to overcome just years of basically kind of like internal vacancy. During those years at King's, my mind was practically remade and refashioned. That was something that prepared me for conversion of the Catholic faith, but also a lifelong love of books and something an interior life with texture and vitality. And it was a transformative experience, not least because of where it eventually led me to, but because of the way that it enabled me to rebuild a mind that had otherwise just been kind of wiped out.
Well, my guest today, Michael Toscano. I need to take a quick break, Michael. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk more. And if you want to join us, the toll-free number here is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. If you want to read Michael's article, it is it's well worth it. It's called Recovering Our Memory. And we'll link over to it as well, okay? Stay with me. I'll be right back.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Santi, who's listening in Maine, for donating his 1983 Jaguar XJ6. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, it's about 10 minutes away. Looking forward to praying with you. If you're just joining me, I am speaking today with the executive director of the Institute for Family Studies. His name is Michael Toscano. And he wrote, I think, an enlightening piece. You can find some value in it on the effects of social media on memory. Right? And he compares the effects of screen time to his years as a daily weed smoker, which he claims he regrets greatly because it erased huge swaths of his memory, and he only has a few cherished memories. These platforms, these devices, attack our human nature, he argues, and he describes now how his wife and he used the tech in their own home, and I think it's well worth the read. We'll try to link over to you so you can read it for yourself. But, Michael, let's pick it up on that point. Let's talk about the tech. I'm thinking about parents right now, you know, whose kids all have it. They have cell phones, they have tablets, they have computers, laptops, whatever it might be. What they can do to safeguard their children, and also your organization, the Institute for Family Studies, does wonderful work. What are you doing on a much larger scale?
Thanks, Drew. Yeah, I mean, I think the temptation right now for parents, given the stresses of life, is to just turn their kids over to a good show or put them in front of a screen. And, you know, and maybe to kind of take a load off and sit down on the couch. You've had a tough day. And every parent needs a break every now and then, you know, and what I would encourage parents to do is to resist that temptation. And the research that is that we have done and that other organizations have done have demonstrated a strong correlation between extremely negative mental health effects that this is having on our adolescents, and even on the relationships that we have among spouses, that spouses that spend a lot of time in their phones are having, are more likely to think about divorce, or they're having sex less, they're going on dates fewer times a year. What it's doing is just sucking up our time together. And so, you know, living as a good husband or a good wife or as a good parent, you know, it's a challenge and it requires sacrifice, but the rewards are just so great and true if you're willing to, at those moments when the temptation comes to you to pick up the phone or to put the phone in front of your child, to decline those pleasures and instead to seek the truer, higher pleasures of being there with you and your family. And what we're doing as an organization is we're studying the problem, as I mentioned above, but also we are working very hard on the state and federal level to get legislation passed that would give parents more power over what their kids are doing on social media. For instance, in 2023, we helped support a bill get passed in Utah that would require the age verification of kids to get on social media platforms. They can't get on if they're under 18 without a parent's permission. And this is something that has been adopted in several other states. Likewise, because pornography is similarly addictive and is similarly damaging or even worse for our kids, mm-hmm. We helped support about 7 states pass legislation like this last year, required you have to prove you're 18 to get on these sites. And now it looks like about a dozen other states around the country are considering similar legislation. If I were a parent, what I'd be doing, and if my state was considering those kinds of laws, now's the time to give your representative a call and to tell him or her how much this would be meaningful for you and your family.
Wow. That's, all right. Well, we've just linked over to your article if anyone wants to read it. It'll also be on our program's show notes today. What do you do personally? You know, I was mentioning that you and your family have personal practice in the household. What advice would you give to those who are listening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I work on a computer every day. I think it's unrealistic to request that people go back to a time when these devices were not a central key piece of our lives. You know, our economy just simply will not allow me to do that. So how could I request it of other people? But we treat our home a little bit differently. So obviously we have electronics at home, but we have at home, we use dumb phones. And our internet is not throughout the house. Some of this will think this is a little bit silly, but it's been very helpful for our family. We have weak internet. We have just a hotspot that we turn on every now and then. And we often do it only when the kids are down or, you know, when they're out for playing or something like that. If my wife needs to get on a laptop in order to do some work for stuff that she's working on, or, and same with me. So in other words, the principle here is just find a way to demonstrate to your kids that you are the ruler over this household, not the technology. Any small signal that you can send to them that they have a choice, that they can determine how the technology is going to be used in their house, you as a parent can show that to them. And it requires sacrifice, and it requires obviously being willing to withstand the criticisms of other people who will definitely think you are strange, but it's worth it.
I'm sure they will. Hey, Michael, thank you. I appreciate your writing and for your public witnesses. It's awesome. Keep up your great work. And if people want to check out your organization as well, what's the web address for that?
You can find us at ifstudies.org. And there are a lot of resources there for you just when it relates to this issue, but also we focus on marriage and family. We study marriage and family. There will be a lot of good things for you there.
Well, great stuff. Michael, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank
Keep
you, Drew.
Appreciate work. It. You got it.
All right.
All right. Chaplet is this. A few minutes away. Let me grab a call or two very quickly for you. The number here is 888-914-9149. Dan's in Rhode Island. Hey, Dan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Hey. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I wanted to share about memory loss and difficulty with marijuana use.
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to the early 70s, and what happened, I was seeing like shadows, and it was in the shape of a dog, and over time it kept getting closer and closer, and by the grace of God, I had this feeling that if I didn't change something, it was going to overtake me. So I heard this camp meeting, and they were singing Christian songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a Christian, and I was going to an evangelical church. And, after I got married for a while, I'm Catholic again.
Good.
And I struggle with memory loss. I'm now in my 70s, and looking back, I've always had trouble with memory a little bit, but after that point, it was really a struggle, and it has been for a long time. So anything that I need to do or remember, I have to almost write down on cards and go over it and over it. Yeah. So
I'm sorry to hear that, Dan.
Well, I can relate to his story, and I really don't like social media that much. Mm-hmm. And during our family times for our holidays, we actually don't have the phones available.
That's great.
So in other words, if you want to be there, you put your phone down and, the day is for the family.
Yeah, I love that. Great policy. Dan, thank you for calling. I don't think you're alone. I know you were smoking in the 70s. Weed was a lot more temperate than it is today. It's pretty high test today, but, today having problems with your memory, but encountered a dark shadows. There is a spiritual component to some of this stuff too. You speak to exorcists or other people, you can really open yourself up to stuff. I'm not saying everyone who smokes is going to be possessed. That's not what I'm saying. But when you allow drunkenness or, illicit drug use, you certainly give those dark spirits certain territory, and you don't want that. If you are away from the faith, I encourage you to get back to confession. As Dan did, he came back to the Catholic Church. There's a real freedom that comes through the sacrament of reconciliation, a liberation, a healing of so many of those wounds, a protection that comes with the sacraments, especially the Eucharist. So we'll pray. Let's pray right now for anyone who's struggling with drugs, with addiction, anyone who's under spiritual attack at this moment. Let's pray for your health, your finances, and whatever other intentions you may have. The Chapel of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. Don't go away.